So why don't we have Congress change the laws to change... No, Congress could fix this tomorrow.
Officials spar over who's to blame for separating families along the southern border and who can fix it. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, June 18th. Good evening. I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, aging water infrastructure in the village of Larson Bay could have major consequences.
Our power would go away, drinking water, and the canneries.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Senator Lisa Murkowski is calling on the Trump administration to stop separating children from their parents when families are caught crossing the southern border. In a written statement on Monday afternoon, Murkowski wrote, quote, "The time is now for the White House to end the cruel, tragic separations of families." She also says she's troubled that asylum seekers are turned away before they have a chance to file their papers. Murkowski urged the Attorney General and the Secretary of Homeland Security to change its policies today. If the administration does not act quickly, she said, Congress could step in. As criticism has intensified over the family separations, the Trump administration has blamed Democrats and lawmakers. Speaking at a White House press briefing earlier today, Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen argued with reporters about who's responsible for changing the new zero-tolerance policy at the border.
I think what the president is trying to do is find a long-term fix. So why don't we have Congress change the laws to change... No, Congress could fix this tomorrow. Yes, I think you were...
On Sunday, both of Alaska's U.S. senators posted Father's Day messages on Facebook that drew a flood of comments from people demanding they speak out against the family separations and also that they support a bill by California Senator Dianne Feinstein, a Democrat, that would halt the practice. Senator Dan Sullivan issued his first statement on the issue Monday. He says it's a complicated matter that requires a bipartisan solution to keep children with their parents. Sullivan called for ending the, quote, catch and release policy that he said encouraged further illegal immigration and child trafficking. He blamed that policy on the previous administration. Sullivan also called for more funding for immigration judges and new facilities so parents and kids can stay together. Compared to a statement she made last week in response to a reporter's question, Murkowski's latest stance is more pointed and urgent. She said last week she had concerns about taking young children from their parents for an indefinite period. Spokeswoman for Don Young said last week the congressman believes detaining people who cross illegally is important to border security, but thinks there are solutions that can keep families together. She said Young looks forward to considering a bill that allows family unity. In other delegation news, Senator Murkowski says she's concerned Alaska's economy will suffer as a result of China's 25% tariff on imports of American seafood. China announced the new import tax Friday in response to U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods. They're due to take effect July 6th. In a written statement, Murkowski said she's urging President Trump to reach a trade policy with China that protects the export market. Congressman Young says he's also asking the administration to ensure Alaska's seafood industry is protected. Senator Sullivan did not respond to an inquiry. In May, Alaska's congressional delegation wrote President Trump warning that a trade dispute could prompt China to retaliate against American seafood. Their letter said a tariff could make targeted exports uncompetitive in an instant. They also said the Chinese market for premium Alaska seafood is especially important because Russia banned seafood imports in response to U.S. sanctions in 2014. The U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to rehear the case of an Alaska moose hunter whose use of a hovercraft in the National River and on the Nation River got him in trouble with the National Park Service. John Sturgeon was on his annual moose hunt in Yukon Charley River's National Preserve in 2007 when rangers told him Park Service rules prohibit hovercraft. The case has become a test of the state of Alaska's sovereignty. Attorney General Jana Lindemuth says if Sturgeon loses, the federal government will be allowed to overrun Alaska's right to make decisions about managing state waters to promote the best interest of Alaskans. Sturgeon and the state claim the Park Service hovercraft ban doesn't apply to the Nation River, even when it flows through Federal Preserve, because the land under navigable waters belongs to the state. The Supreme Court heard the case in 2016 and sent it back to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, saying the court's interpretation of the law was wrong. But the High Court didn't say what the correct interpretation is, so when the Ninth Circuit again ruled against Sturgeon, citing a different reason, it seemed inevitable the justices would hear the case again. The Supreme Court agreed to take up the case sometime in next term, which runs from October until June or July. Larsen Bay, a community of fewer than 100 people in southwest Kodiak Island, is dealing with an ongoing water issue. Kodiak Representative Louise Stutes visited the village recently with the director of the Alaska Office of Management and Budget, Pat Pitney, to take a look. The spillway of Larsen Bay's reservoir, which supplies its hydroelectric plant with water, is aging. But during the visit, it became apparent that that's only one point of weakness in the community's water system. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
The acting mayor of Larsen Bay, Bill Nelson, stands on a wooden structure extended over the community's reservoir like a dock.
Yesterday, our village consumed 92,000 gallons of water in 24 hours, and our well only produces 36 gallons per minute. So without this reservoir, we would be in big trouble right
now. Well, you'd have no water.
That's Representative Louise Stutes. Nelson is leading a tour of the water facilities for Stutes, along with State Budget Director Pat Pitney. He points to what looks like a waterfall on one side of the reservoir.
As you can see, I take the excavator and I pile all rocks, and I had sandbags all the way down here, but of course in the spring, with the water runoff, they have all washed out.
The sandbags he's talking about are lined up at the mouth of the waterfall, but the water has pulled some of them close to the edge. He says they add them to raise the water level during dry spells in the summer to maintain water flow over the spillway and feed the hydroelectric plant. The concrete spillway was built along with the reservoir system in the 1980s. The aging spillway is a major point of weakness, Nelson explains, because it's eroding. Over the past 10 years, he's reached out for help from state agencies, but so far hasn't had much success finding a permanent fix. Now he says the situation is more urgent than ever. He's afraid the spillway will collapse.
Our power would go away, drinking water, and the canneries.
Nelson says 75% of the community's water comes from the reservoir, and the other 25% comes from the well. Part of Nelson's tour includes a stop at the water treatment plant. Hugh Kennan, who runs the plant, says there's another infrastructure problem.
I'm making 93,000 gallons a day, and estimating that 40,000 of it never gets into a home.
Larsen Bay, like many of the island communities, deals with hard-to-find leaks.
Again, the infrastructure here is dated, and it's not going to get better. And in right. fact, we've watched it go from a loss of 10,000 gallons a day to a loss of 40,000 gallons in probably 5 years.
And that's on top of yet another issue. Nelson says there are 5 connected beaver dams along the water system, which help control the water flow. A section of the dams washed out in 2011 and filled the reservoir with dirt and mud, which they had to clean up. Nelson says the beavers have since rebuilt the dams. He's afraid it could happen again, but for now his focus is on repairing or replacing the spillway. Nelson says he'll continue applying for funds to fix the problem and keep on reaching out to legislators.
Hopefully, the more I talk and the more I bark, people will listen, and because this would be a disaster if this spillway ever let loose.
He says fixing the problems now would cost less than cleaning up the mess later if the infrastructure collapsed. In Larsen Bay, I'm Kayla DeRoche for KMXT.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, not everyone in Alaska's northernmost city can decide what to call where they live.
I call it Okalvik now.
I still call it Barrows.
I will use both at this point.
That is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds, narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart. Protect it. This message sponsored by Alaska Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW. Public media loves being part of your day. Thank you for listening and for your support.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers have beefed up their guidelines for wetlands mitigation in Alaska, elaborating on ways a developer can compensate for disturbing bogs, ponds, and streams. The idea of mitigation is that developers are permitted to fill a wetland if they restore or protect a similar property nearby. But mitigation is challenging in Alaska, where much of the state itself is considered a wetland, and opportunities to restore private land in that area may be scarce. Energy and Environment News reviewed wetlands permits in Alaska going back to 2015 and found the Corps had only required mitigation 26% of the time. The new agreement between the federal agencies says the mitigation can be farther afield from the construction project and may be on public land. It also allows out-of-kind mitigation, meaning that the project may involve filling a wetland, but the mitigation for it could be the restoration of, say, a stream. It's unclear whether the guidelines will result in more mitigation projects in Alaska, but E&E News says it seems to take aim at several of the justifications the Corps used to conclude mitigation was not required for particular permits. Pogo Mine officials say the company may extend the life of the mine northeast of Delta Junction if exploration they're conducting this summer confirms the presence of potentially rich gold deposits.
What we're doing this summer is quite a bit of exploration. We are dedicating about $21 million to exploration and definition drilling, which will really just help us determine where the rest of the gold is. How do we get to it? How much is there?
Pogo spokeswoman Wendy McNaughton says it was the discovery of additional gold reserves around the Fort Knox mine north of Fairbanks that prompted Kinross Gold Corporation officials to announce Tuesday they have extended the life of that mine through the coming decade.
They did their exploration and they found very favorable results earlier in the spring. And so they have since translated that to extend their life of mine to 2030.
McNaughton says officials with Sumitomo Metal Mining Pogo already have extended the life of the Pogo mine since it began operation in 2006 because additional gold reserves were discovered, and now it's extended to 2021. She says that could change depending on what this summer's exploration reveals.
So we're hoping towards the end of the summer we'll have a pretty good idea of how much gold we can access.
McNaughton says the exploration will focus on two areas near the mine, the Fun Zone and West Goodpaster. Company officials said during the annual Alaska Miners Association conference in April that initial exploration last year showed promising prospects in those areas.
It is very, very promising. I think that we're all very optimistic that there's quite a bit of gold out there.
The Pogo mine is located about 35 miles northeast of Delta. It employs about 320 people and does business with more than 100 contractors. In canneries, the term mug up means coffee break. It's also the name of a new effort to share the history of the NN Cannery, a now closed cannery in South Naknek that operated almost continuously for 120 years. At this month's Bristol Bay Fish Expo, the NN Cannery History Project launched the new effort with a Mug Up Conversations event where they invited former cannery workers to share their stories.
I think that, you know, you may not have ever worked in a cannery or even care about canneries, but there's something to be said for appreciating the history of work.
Since the cannery closed in 2015, historian Katie Ringsmith has been working with partners like the National Park Service and the State Historical Preservation Office to ensure its place in history isn't forgotten. In May, the project received a $50,000 Maritime Heritage Grant from the Park Service to collect oral histories from people who lived and worked there. Partnering with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and the stories will be available on UAF's site, Project Jukebox.
And many of the people who worked at these canneries no one knows about them. And when you start looking at these canneries and you're looking at the international crews that contributed to one of Alaska's most significant industries, I think it's very important to record these stories.
Until the mid-90s, Ringsmith's father ran the cannery, which is now owned by Trident Seafoods. She spent time sliming fish there in the summers to working her way through college, working shoulder to shoulder with people from all over the world.
The experience of being able to work next to people who were different than me, had different customs, different perspectives, different understanding of the world, but nevertheless, we all were working towards a common goal, allowed me to, without even knowing it, appreciate the world.
The grant also means the project is one step closer to becoming the first Alaska cannery designated as a maritime history district. The designation would make it easier for the project to receive additional funding in the future and recognize its importance in Alaska and global history.
In part, what I'm trying to do is bring dignity to the cannery work, the cannery story. Yeah, sure, it's great. You know, everybody talks about how cool it is to be a Bristol Bay fishermen, but I want kids out there to speak equally as proud of the cannery work. Yeah, my mom worked in an egg house. That's awesome, right?
The storytelling project is just one piece of a multifaceted effort to preserve the cannery's history. They're also working to create a traveling mug-up exhibit that would bring the story of the cannery around the state, the country, and the world.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. And by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting.
Want a fulfilling volunteer opportunity, educating and protecting your community? As a trained Medicare volunteer, you'll help stop fraud and connect people with the benefits they've earned. You can make a powerful difference for Alaska's seniors. Learn more at medicare.alaska.gov or call Alaska's Medicare Information Office at 800-478-6065. This message sponsored by Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Back in 2016, the town most of the world knew as Barrow voted to officially start going by the traditional Inupiaq name Utqiagvik. The vote passed by a slim margin of 6 votes. In the ensuing months, there was pushback from some residents who wanted to keep the name Barrow and others who said the town historically had a different traditional name. That was the view of the local Native Corporation, which filed a lawsuit to try to stop the change. But over a year and a half later, Utqiagvik is still the official name of the city. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Ravenna Koenig has this report on what the transition is looking and sounding like in Utqiagvik.
I'm standing on the tarmac, and I'm looking at the airport, and it says Alaska Airlines Barrow.
That's the first thing you see when you get off the plane in Utqiagvik. And walking around town, Barrow is everywhere. On the fire trucks, in the name of the high school and the local utility company, on the North Slope Borough's official logo, it's even scrawled on some of the brightly painted dumpsters. On the other hand, City Hall has Utqiagvik up on the front of the building, and on bulletin boards around town, where people post notices to the community, Utqiagvik is starting to appear in some of the municipal department letterhead. What I'm hearing is also a mix.
I call it Utqiagvik now.
I still call it Barrow.
I will use both at this point.
Oh, I still call it Barrow out of habit.
Utqiagvik. I was born in Barrow and I still live in Barrow.
I'm very happy they changed it to the original name, Utqiagvik.
Back when the name change went through, a lot of feathers got ruffled here. Under 20% of the town voted, and some say there wasn't enough time between when the name change was proposed and when it was voted on for the community to really become aware of what was going to be decided at the polls. Today, there are still people who feel that the official name of this place should have remained Barrow. Charles Brower, at the Native Village of Barrow, the local tribal government, is one of them.
I wasn't interested in changing the name to Utqiagvik. It's always been Barrow.
He says that the tribal council has no plans to change its name. Then there are those who were really supportive of the change, like Fanny Akpik, the coordinator for Inupiaq education at the North Slope Borough School District.
How does it make you feel to hear people call it Utqiagvik?
It warms my spirit.
Okpik is in her 60s and says she doesn't remember hearing the name Barrow until she showed up for her first day of school and saw it written on the building. For her, the reversion to the traditional name is a way of affirming the Inupiaq identity of this place.
Someday, I hope everybody will walk around and be proud to live in Utqiaġvik like I do.
Tennessee Judkins is a teacher for the school district in Inupiaq Education. She voted to change the name, but she also says she's okay with certain things in town continuing to be called Barrow, like the high school, where she played volleyball and rooted for the basketball teams.
I wouldn't be sad if it never changed. That's one thing I'm like, you know, cool, you could keep it Barrow High School, because we are Barrow Whalers.
Some of the initial hubbub about the name change has quieted at this point, but Utqiaġvik is still in transition. There's a mountain of logistics that go into changing a place's name, and some of that costs money, which was one of the initial concerns brought up by people who were against the change. It's unclear how long it will be before all the signage, textbooks, maps, and the airport code fully reflect the name Utqiaġvik. For now, at least, what people call this place seems to be a choice they're making, day by day, conversation by conversation, document by document, like at the DMV.
Hello.
People can choose which town name they want printed on their driver's license. Dawn D. Ipoluk works at the DMV at City Hall and issues those IDs. And she says that if she had to estimate the percentage of people who are choosing Barrow versus Utqiaġvik,
I would say about probably 80-20.
That's 80% Barrow, 20% Utqiaġvik. Ipoluk says a lot of people choose Barrow because it's easier to spell. Others have come in to add Utqiaġvik to their ID, even though it hasn't expired yet, just because they're proud of the name. Robert Nagyak grew up here. He says he respects the change and uses Utqiaġvik sometimes himself, but he's not a stickler for what people call this place.
I just don't have a problem with either or. Utqiaġvik, Barrow, still the same place. It's the most northern city in the United States of America.
In other words, home. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Utqiaġvik.
Alcohol abuse is an issue throughout the country, even in areas where it's illegal. Banning alcohol doesn't always solve the problem. So should communities try swinging the other way to make it more available? Could opening a liquor store help a community instead of harming it? Reporter Ann Hillman with Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk went to Kayana in the Northwest Arctic, which opened a liquor store a few years ago. She learned that reviews are mixed.
A group of middle school cheerleaders stand in the bleachers of the Kayana School gym in late winter. They don't have coordinating outfits, but their words ring out in sync to a relatively quiet gym. After the game, the kids talk over each other, trying to explain life in the village beyond cheering.
We always play or something.
Play out, okay. Or skiing.
And sometimes we have practice.
Yeah, and then we always go out for walks and have fun.
That's what they did when they left the gym around 8 p.m. that night. They wandered through the village of about 370 people on foot and on ski. But this time, two of the kids came across two men who had been drinking. The kids, including Danielle Douglas, escorted the stumbling men home. The next morning, she talked about the experience.
Two people were drunk and they barely even could walk.
How did that make you feel?
Sad. I did not like them when they are drunk.
Do you feel unsafe?
Yep.
Then why did you help them home?
So they don't have to get cold and stay outside.
Danielle blames the controversial liquor store. She says it causes people to be drunk all the time. Some people agree with her, others don't. Kayana voted to allow for local alcohol sales in 2009, and about 2 years later, people could import a limited amount of alcohol through a distribution center. Then, in 2014, the city-run package store opened with limited sales. The store is open 2 hours per day, except Wednesday and Sunday. It's also closed during school events and times of bereavement. Every year, people have to pay $100 for a permit to shop there and get a background check. If you have a felony or can't drink while on probation, then you can't get a permit. Kayana Mayor Dale Stutz says there are about 45 people with permits in the village. And there's another provision. People have to pay off all their water, sewer, and power bills.
If they can't meet their other bills, they're not welcome to go shopping in their store. So, a little harsh, you say, but it works.
Seth says people have paid off long overdue accounts, and that's just one of the positive effects of the store. The alcohol sales tax has also funded a new youth center.
It's something we've been trying to achieve for a number of years, and we felt that with that income, we had a really good chance of fulfilling that dream for the kids.
He says the council has given out small amounts for scholarships and burials, too. But Stutz says they haven't made much money, in part because the store has been vandalized and broken into.
We've had suffered losses from theft in the liquor store, damage to the building during the breaking and entering process.
Community members say there's been more crime and domestic violence in general since the store opened. Data from the Department of Public Safety shows that there was a spike in the number of incidents in 2011 when the distribution center opened. Then it dropped. There was a smaller spike in 2015 after the liquor store opened, but then the number has dropped again. Resident Nellie Shirka says the problem is that alcohol is more accessible and visible. People are drinking more openly and at home. She says it traumatizes the kids, and a youth center won't fix that.
What happens at home impacts the kids. I mean, for life. We can do without a teen center.
People shopping at the package store on the weekend of the basketball game didn't want to talk on record about buying alcohol because drinking is so stigmatized in the village. But they say they see the benefits of legal sales. People don't spend as much money on bootlegged liquor, and it helps teach moderate drinking habits. They were less likely to binge drink because they knew it would always be available. Nellie says that's not what she sees in Cayena, the village where she grew up.
There may be responsible drinkers out there, but I haven't seen one yet.
But she also doesn't think banning alcohol altogether is the right answer. Nellie says the village needs a middle ground. They should get rid of the liquor store, but still allow people to import limited amounts of alcohol.
Prohibition never did work. It will never work. I mean, a person want to drink, they'll find a way to get it.
But the liquor store isn't going anywhere anytime soon. The city's license was just renewed and is good through 2019. For the Solutions Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we are online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Kayla DeRoche in Larson Bay, Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Aaron McKinstry in Anchorage, Ann Hillman in Cayena, and Ravenna Koenig in Utqiagvik. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile services to help Alaskans and their businesses bank on the go. Learn how experience and knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
If you're looking for business opportunities in the government marketplace, you'll want to know about the Alaska Procurement Technical Assistance Center. Alaska PTAC helps businesses navigate the challenging process of the federal, state, and local government procurement cycles with offices in Anchorage and Fairbanks and delivers services statewide. More information at ptacalaska.org. This message sponsored by Alaska PTAC.
Never miss another episode of your favorite PBS primetime programs thanks to Afternoon Tea on Alaska Public Media TV. Every weekday, you can catch up on the drama of Masterpiece. Be amazed by our universe with Nature and Nova. Search for garage treasures on Antiques Roadshow and solve mysteries alongside our favorite detectives. Watch Afternoon Tea weekdays from 3 to 5 p.m. only on Alaska Public Media TV. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.